Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, the disappearing cow to my always present bull, it's Dan.
Hey, good evening.
How you doing,
Dan? I'm doing good. That'll fit good well into the most interesting thing I found from last night's episode too. So I'm doing good. You really set me up there.
Yeah, nice. Interesting the way you said that. You've piqued my interest as to what you might say about this episode.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking insane.
So, 38 seconds to the first F-bomb, nice. So, yes, we are back again for yet another trip into the mazy mindverse of Legion. But before we get to this week's episode, I'd like to take a minute or two for more thoughts on last week's episode. Now, I don't think that I mentioned that while Melanie was telling us about the history of the Mego Order, someone or something called Miser Sunday had killed them off. And she does reference that this was well before David's time. So it's just a minor thing, but I'm thinking it's such a very specific detail to be referenced and checked. It's not even a comic book reference, so it's something they created for the show. So I'm kind of wondering if whatever this Miser Sunday is, and now I don't know if it's a person or a group of people or whatever it might be, but I'm wondering if somehow that's going to surface again, I guess in present day or future, who knows, on the series.
Yeah, I was thinking either that or like Noah Hawley just like really likes The Usual Suspects and was making some kind of weird joke, but it'd be...
Is there a reference to Usual Suspects?
No, but you know, Miser Sunday sounds a lot like Kaiser Soze, so...
Oh, okay. All right. Kind of threw me there. I was like, I thought I knew that script. The only other thing I wanted to give an additional nod to, because although we did discuss the little narration part, the little John Hamm narrated segment last week, there was something that I thought really kind of stuck out, especially after watching this week's episode. So I just want to go back to last week and talk about it just a little bit. There is a big chunk of it where he describes, like, what if someone was taught something that was inherently false from the start? So that perspective would become their reality, and they would only end up being, you know, slain due to that misperception. I mean, in the story, they show, I guess, supposed to be like Oliver teaching a boy about the colors, the colors red and green, but switching them, which ultimately leads to the kid's death when he's crossing the street. So, I was wondering if this is their way, or one of their many ways, perhaps, of trying to send us a message about what we've seen so far. Either it's this season or on Legion as a whole. Something that we've been told and shown time and time again to be one way, when the actual truth may be it's the opposite. That what we believe is reality is not reality. Now, this could pertain to so many different things, if you look at it that way. It could be how we've seen David, and that would tie into what we were talking about last week, you know, the implications that perhaps David is going to turn out to be the villain. Or conversely, how we see the Shadow King. Because although what we saw last season, and even this season, where he's killed off a bunch of people, it could best be described as perpetrating many evil acts, whatever. But maybe at the end of the day, at a certain point, he's not the villain after all. Although he's believed to be by everyone and everything we've been seeing. Again, I think there are other more direct ways that this is said in that episode, as well as the one that we're about to talk about in a minute or two. But I just thought it just deserved to be mentioned one more time, because I think they're really trying to hit us with that idea. You know, it's almost like we shouldn't be blindsided when the script is flipped on us, is what I'm thinking with this show, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, right.
That actually really is all I got regarding last week's episode. So unless there's something that occurs to you, I'm guessing no. I'm gonna go.
Nope, I don't know anything. I know nothing.
Okay. You're the Sergeant Schultz of the podcast now.
Yeah, I watched Stalag 17 a couple nights ago, but I'm not that Sergeant Schultz.
Well, when Hogan's Heroes and the Sergeant Schultz character was kind of more than loosely
Yeah.
based on the Stalag 17 character, even the voice thing. I love Stalag 17. Is
Right.
that the first time you'd ever seen Stalag 17?
No, I'd seen it maybe 15 years or so ago, but I mean, I've changed a lot since then. So I definitely, I've seen a lot more of William Holden and Billy Wilder movies since then. I mean, I've even seen Otto Preminger movies since then. So yeah.
Nice. Well, Billy, I think Billy Wilder is one of the legitimate geniuses of cinema, and
Oh yeah.
Stalag 17 is, it's in my mind, it's neck and neck with The Great Escape as the two best POW movies, and a case can absolutely be made, probably very easily, for Stalag 17 being the best.
Yeah, I think it's more like our style, because it's more like, cynical and noirish instead of like, kind of more goofy. Not that Great Escape doesn't have plenty of wretched, horrible things
Yeah, I
happening,
was gonna
but
say, I don't know if I don't think I'd refer to Great Escape as goofy. I think, but you're right. I mean, Stalag 17 is just a much grittier tale, whereas The Great Escape is telling a much bigger story. And
yeah.
it's the CinemaScope style of movie, whereas Stalag 17 is as close as you get to noir in a World War II barracks situation. Okay, but that's it for both last week's Legion and our little foray into Billy Wilder. Perhaps we'll talk about him another time. But now it's time to talk about Legion, Chapter 11. Now, Chapter 11, this time they actually started right off with one of those aforementioned John Hamm narrated segments. I thought it was funny how they deliberately transposed the words on the title card, so it reads Part Contagion 5 instead of Part 5 Contagion. It's very strange. It's an interesting segment. Each one has been interesting each week. This one, they're actually referencing events from history where, I guess, the best way to phrase it is like where some form of mass hysteria led to an uncontrollable state of groupthink kind of thing. So
Yeah,
each thing that's referenced actually happened. Go on.
I've heard about all those on like I listened to the Mysterious Universe podcast, and they've talked about these events, multiple times. So it's kind of
Awesome.
cool to see them like, being discussed in a really like interesting way while John Hamm's talking about it.
Yeah. Because they touched on like the dancing plague of 1518, which I guess affected hundreds of people in the town of Strasbourg, or the I'm not going to pronounce this correctly, but I'll try, the Tanganyika laughing epidemic that I guess that was in the early 60s, that caused just what it sounds like a virtual epidemic of laughter. And then what we're shown is how a cheerleader's nervous tic from being stressed out about our arguing parents soon pretty much spreads throughout the entire squad. The one thing about these segments, I mean, again, Legion, for I think we all, anyone who has watched Legion, that maybe the most since perhaps Hannibal, maybe. It's one of the most beautifully and imaginatively shot series that I've ever seen. And they've really been upping the stakes with how they shoot these little segments, you know?
Well, go ahead.
No, I was pausing to let you talk for a change. So, what were you going to say?
Oh yeah, and I definitely, I mean, it's strange how they're doing this, but I'm also like noticing, and I suppose I probably should go back and like dig into it deeper. But like this one had like a cameo, so like the actress that plays Captain Sisko's wife on Deep Space Nine, and Sherry Palmer is like in one of the like she was like the doctor treating like one of the cheerleaders or whatever. I'm just like, okay,
Oh, okay. That's neat.
yeah.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, I don't know if she was credited or whatever, but it definitely was her.
Well, if they're going to slip in anything that involves a character or actor or actress from one, especially from one of the 80s or 90s Star Trek series, you're going to be the first one to point it out, I'm sure. And this entire segment culminates in this final line. If the idea of illness can become illness, what else in our reality is actually a disorder? Now, That's an interesting idea for a number of reasons, or I don't know, at least one or two. Before I go on further with it, I'll throw it to you because you're a smart guy over there. Not just what did you think of the segment, but what did you think that meant? Either it be for this specific episode or maybe for the series overall. Just curious how you took it.
Honestly, I don't know. I can't remember how I took it. When I watched it, something came to me, but then I like fell asleep not too long after that, and it just kind of like went away. Like, you know, Paul Kinsey's like a really good idea
Right,
again.
right, 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 right,
So,
right.
but it definitely like reminded me of something. I just don't know right now.
Okay, well, I'll give a shot to what the thoughts that occurred to me, because they're talking about how, again, if the idea of an illness can become illness, what else in reality is actually a disorder? So some interesting things. First of all, there has been a running thing on this show with most of these characters actually, where each of these characters who have some form of powers or abilities, they really tend to view them as almost more of as an affliction or an illness, you know, or a curse, if you want to take it. I mean, whether it be David, Potonomy, the Loudermilks, Sid, and so on. And then really, if you go back to season one, when we were first introduced to David, he thought and had been told over and over that he had a mental illness. So he believed that that was his situation. When in fact it turned out that it wasn't a mental illness, it was the fact that he had these, you know, great powers. I mean, he did have a parasite in him, you know, the Shadow King, so there was a form of an affliction. But it felt like in a weird way this is kind of referencing that, and maybe it's kind of a hint that that could still possibly be an issue moving forward in this series. Again, I'm just spitballing here, but that was what I was thinking when I when they when I heard when I heard when I heard the Hamaconda say that. That was what I was thinking.
Interesting.
Now, in this season, the idea of a psychological contagion has manifested in the form of the catalyst. You know, all those people who are frozen like statues, and they're chattering their teeth. And you know, after David has that poolside conversation with Farouk and Lenny, which we can table for now, we could talk about that later with a handful of other noteworthy kind of things. He arises from the tank in Loudermilk's lab to find that Division 3 has mostly abandoned, and other than Carrie, everyone remaining is now afflicted with the catalyst. So the interesting thing about this episode, or for some people, it might have been the less interesting part about this episode, quite frankly, is that it ends up following a very straightforward storyline, which is a little bit unusual for this show. It's, you know, it's almost like the formula is laid out from that point on. We know that now that David is going to have to dive into the minds of each of these characters to release them from their mental prison, which, again, it's kind of a reverse of what we saw last season when we had, you know, Tonami, Melanie, and so on were constantly mucking about in David's head. Now he's got to go into everybody else's head. So that was something I caught on pretty quickly. I was like, oh, it's they're flipping what happened last year. That's interesting. So we had, I think we were talking the other day about hoping they would do more with certain characters, and I think the ones that we cited specifically were Potonomy and Melanie. So coincidentally, those are the two people who we spent some time going into their minds and then interacting with them afterwards. So they kind of helped that along a little bit, and we can talk about how interesting. I keep using the word interesting. I apologize. I'm hearing myself say that word too many times. We can talk about how visually different or fun or strange those sequences were, and because that's a lot of what Legion is about, that kind of thing. Did you feel that they but even despite that, and despite what you know, we were spending so much time with these characters or inside their head, do you think that they really did a lot to help develop those two characters any further than they have already? How did you feel about that?
No, not really. I mean, but you know, with at least with Melanie, I don't know. I guess they. I mean, they did some. I mean, it wasn't anything like super significant, but like, you know, seeing the Potonomy really like, you know, just would like to be able to forget stuff. I mean, you know, that's the kind of thing where like it makes me empathize with the character, because like I didn't really consider that as like something he'd like actually have to deal with, like just having to like know everybody's memories, not be able to like really like shut him off, and then he can't forget him. That would be really freaking lame. So, I mean, that's a hook where like, you know, if they continue to develop the character more, it'll be easier to like, you know, have some kind of attachment to him, whether or not he, you know, ends up being, you know, a good guy or some kind of like a, you know, bastard or whatever. And then, you know, I thought that the Melanie thing was just interesting, but I didn't give it a ton of thought as to what it meant, but it did kind of seem like, you know, like, I mean, like they were trying to like, you know, show what the character was like in just kind of like an interesting, you know, old school RPG kind of way.
I liked both sequences for different reasons. Unfortunately, it was rarely about the characters themselves, though. I liked the Tanami sequence because I honestly, it's because I really enjoyed Carrie Loudermilk in that sequence, or, you know, and Bill Irwin, who has really been doing some fine work on this series, and especially this season, I think. And we're definitely at some point later on the podcast, we definitely should at least spend a couple minutes talking just about the Loudermilks, because if anyone's getting some, if any of the side characters are getting some decent character development, I think it's the Loudermilks, quite frankly.
Yeah, there's been some interesting things going on to them.
Definitely. The problem I have with the Tanami part is, well, number one, that's not much of a revelation. That, you know, because I'm, you know, a character who can remember everything, you know, from the moment he was born and everyone else's memories, yes, it kind of would make sense that he'd like to be able to shut that off. So he's created a fantasy world where he can't remember anything. But the problem is, it's Carrie figuring that all out, and it's really Carrie talking about it, and so I don't get that much about from Tanami himself. I'm a little confused about one thing about Ptonomy, though, and I'm glad that Bill Irwin said his name so clearly. So now I realize how I believe his name is supposed to be pronounced. So apparently, you do hit the P,
I guess.
unless he's mispronouncing it. I don't know. And I probably have this written in my notes later on, but who cares? Let's talk about it now, since we're talking about Ptonomy. Before that, we saw the little creepy crawly thing go into his ear. But nothing else happened regarding that that I can recall. Is that something that's is lying in wait? That's gonna ha something's gonna happen with it later on, or am I misunderstanding something here?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I got the impression that was what threw him into a you know, his like, you know, weird no memory thing.
See, it can't be that because he was affected like everybody else. It was the catalyst. That's why he was frozen and his teeth were chattering. So it's two separate things. So I don't. I'm kind of wondering about that. I mean, again, it could be something that's, you know, lying in wait, or, you know. And I know. I shouldn't say I know. I'm suspecting, you know, especially after a show that we watched last season, we already saw one creepy crawly thing, you know, find its way inside someone while they were sleeping. So it's kind of funny to see that happen again. This wasn't as nauseating as that was, but then again, nor was it as memorable, because that I just gave myself a shiver just remembering that. Anyone who doesn't know what I'm talking about, I'm talking about the great, great Twin Peaks chapter 8, or episode 8 episode from last year. If anyone who watched it on Showtime, you know the one. You know the one we mean. Again, I liked it. I kind of wish there had been some way they could have made it more about Ptonomy somehow revealing about himself. And the thing about this show, this is the one show that they can come up with the most bizarre, wacky way to do anything they want. There are literally no rules on this show. So you could have had like a second or third Ptonomy show up and be talking about it instead of Carrie. You know what I mean? They just could have done anything. So the Melanie part, okay, that was, on one hand, it gave us a little bit more insight into her, you know, because she wants to be in it, even though it was interesting because it's all like words on the screen. And there has been this habit that Noah Hawley has, and it's a delightful habit on this show, where they do play with the visuals and words on the screen. You know, I mean, we all remember our letters. We all remember what they did with doing the Bolero sequence last year, and all those letters floating. And what was it they spelled? They spelled something that was in, you know, part of the show. I don't remember what it was right now. It's been a while. But I get that she wants to be in control. She needs, you know, because she kind of has lost all control at this point. So this is kind of emblematic of that. I'll give it, also give it credit because there's a certain mysterious element to it. What's the deal with that disabled Minotaur? Which I think we've seen before. Have we seen? I feel like we've seen the Minotaur before. Am I crazy? Do you
I don't
remember?
remember.
Okay, if you don't remember it, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe just has a feeling of familiarity, whatever. But it's interesting that it's a hobbled Minotaur. So it's a monster, a creature, an ancient enemy, if you will, that's been hobbled, wounded in some way, has limitations put on it. It seems almost like it's an analogous to the Shadow King, sort of, because you know he's not able to do everything he wants or can do because he doesn't have his body. But I'm not sure why that would be showing up in Melanie's head, except for maybe the Oliver connection, maybe. I don't know. It was a very striking visual, and obviously they keep talking about mazes. Of course, you're going to have a Minotaur at some point for anyone who knows Erbil Finch's mythology and so on. Oh, by the way, just here, this is my habit. I'm going to be skipping all around tonight. And at the end, we get a brief moment inside Cid's head, but all you see there is that there's a raging blizzard inside her brain. And I guess we'll be picking that up ne in the next week's episode. So, again, skipping around earlier in the episode, I guess we get a flashback. So we get Farouk sitting in a restaurant. There's like women on either side of him. But in the reflection of his sunglasses, we see something, and it looks to me like it's the animation from last season, which kind of detailed the original battle between the Shadow King and, let's just call him Professor X, because that's who it really is. That is what that was, right? That's what it looked like to me.
Yeah.
Okay, I love them popping that in there. So they kind of, by now I'm wondering, by taking that little moment from last season and coupling it with what David said, what Farouk says to David, rather, a little bit later, since Farouk's powers are largely mental, as are Professor X's. See, I'm wondering if this is like a weird shorthand way of saying that that battle maybe took place in his mind as opposed to in the physical
Yeah.
world. Like maybe it took place on another. Since this show is all about things taking place on the astral plane or in alternate realities, whatever, maybe that's where that took place as well, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that was the impression I always got.
Okay, that's what I thought. So, anyway, quickly, the rest of the flashback has those monks taking his body away. And they've put his body into what really looks like a large egg. That seems to be a prevailing image and concept that they've been hitting this season. Every episode has mentioned or shown an egg, I've noticed. So, and obviously, an egg is so, you know, it's such a metaphor for the beginning and creation of life and all the other things. And Easter. No, I'm not kidding with the Easter thing.
Yeah, plus it brings us back around to Stalag 17 because there was an egg in that movie.
See, it makes me think more of Cool Hand Luke because there's a whole lot of eggs in that movie.
Yeah, I haven't
But
seen that.
you've never seen Cool Hand Luke?
No.
Oh, gotta see Cool Hand Luke. You love Cool Hand Luke. See, what you should do is like you should just keep coming with genre films that you're gonna watch like for a week or two. So watching POW films. See that's more like prison slash work form movie. So you can watch that, Shawshank, but you know, Birdman of Alcatraz. Anyway,
The Rock.
yes. Wait, it's not The Rock. Wait, it was The Rock, but what's the other one? Con Air.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? Con Air is big, dumb, dumb, loud, stupid fun, but it's got a pretty damn good cast if you go back and look at it. Anyway, where were we? We keep getting sidetracked into movies tonight. So they take the egg, and they essentially bury it under the temple. And then sometime later, they start hearing these booming sounds from down below. But there's more on that much later on, because, you know, we should really skip over to David's meeting with Farouk by the pool. And Lenny. So, I think we were happy or pleased to get a lot more information on the Lenny situation over the last couple episodes. Which is interesting because Lenny now, to me, has now become a truly tragic character. And Aubrey Plaza is still working wonders on this show, I think. You know, just using her palette to do, you know, the crazy, jittery, you know, leering, junky side of the Lenny character. I really kind of enjoyed her interactions with David, and especially what she was doing in the background while David and Farouk are talking. It seemed a little mean that David really seemed like he didn't give a damn about her. Like he never said, like he doesn't even say anything to Farouk about, hey, you made, you know, he hasn't tried to help her like she asked him to. David's mean. But
yeah, he's pretty apathetic about that whole Lenny situation.
Yeah, at this point. Which is funny because, you know, just the previous week he was wondering about whether anything was real, and it seemed like they keep toying with him about that. But we now know she is. We now know it was. So it's sad. But I did like her trying to blow her brains out and the bubbles coming out of the gun. So that was very a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So that conversation between Farouk and David really covers Farouk's history. So we get a little backstory there. And again, we get a different perspective on the tale of how David's dad, again, Professor X, defeated him, and how his survival meant, in order to survive, I should say, he, you know, attached himself to David as a baby. It's funny that Farouk is trying to paint this image of himself, and they even have a whole conversation about the word villain. So again, we're going back to the idea of, you know, a villain might not be what you think it is or who you think it is or whatever. But at the end of the day, by attaching yourself, you know, your parasitic form of yourself to the baby, the infant of the person who defeated you, that's got more than a little bit of revenge tied to it. That wasn't just purely about survival. So that's I'm gonna call bullshit on Farouk on that one.
Yeah, obviously.
I'm more so enjoying this actress' performance as Farouk, because, you know, again, it's nice that they've added a character who's really kind of fit in really nicely onto the show. The one unfortunate thing about this episode, if there might be more than one, but just right off the bat, unless I'm forgetting, this felt like it was a pretty much an Oliver Free episode.
Right. I don't think we saw him at all.
I don't think we saw Oliver at all in this episode. Which is a shame, because I really like when that character's on screen. There's something about him that just makes me smile, and it's kind of sorry. I mean, I like this guy too, but maybe it's because when I see Oliver, I still think of him as Oliver, even if he's possessed or is the vessel for Farouk, whereas this is like just the purely the bad guy or something. I don't know.
Right.
What else can we talk about? Oh, We can talk about the Loudermilks now, because I think you want to talk about that a little bit. We got some stuff which veered into almost comic relief, but I think the show kind of needs that from time to time. All the stuff with Carrie and Kerry and him showing her about eating, and basically as my notes were, From dumplings to taking a dump. I'm really I'm really enjoying their time on screen and the beautiful awkwardness of it. And Bill Irwin's performance, it's like one step away from heartbreaking because he so obviously cares so much about, his twin because it's part of him, and it's really I find it to be one of the most effective things on the series right now, as far as from an emotional standpoint, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Anything about it that stuck out to you that you were kind of enjoying with the two of them and what's been going on with him?
No, I think you covered it pretty well, but it definitely is great seeing them, all the time. It really works well, and I have no idea what they're going to end up doing with them.
Wouldn't he know better than to offer to, well, to put it bluntly, than to offer to help wipe his sister's ass, though?
Yeah, I
Because
don't know.
I was thinking, because even she's like, no, I'm getting the hang of it. I did wonder, and again, it may purely just be a coincidence. Although I guess there should be no such thing as a coincidence. Isn't he the only one when David comes out of the tank and he finds Carrie, and it seems to me that Carrie's the only one who didn't get affected by the catalyst.
Yeah.
Which I found. I wanted to find suspicious, but then I kept thinking, well, it's also how you're going to be able to tell the story. Because if it's just David wandering around, we're never going to get anywhere. But I was just wondering
Yeah.
if there could be any additional meaning to it. It doesn't appear that there is at this point.
Yeah, I think it just is because, like him and Carrier flipped, so he's kind of like less there, I suppose, in a way, so he can't be affected that way.
So speaking of being less there, so. At the end, when he finds her, frozen, chattering, whatever. So he's trying to enter her body, because now he doesn't. I know. You know what I mean. And it appears at first that he's unable to, and then it's like he disappears. Does that mean that he was successful? That he is inside her, or is there something else going on there that I'm just not getting?
Yeah, I got that impression, but I'm not sure like what exactly happened and why he apologized as to why he did it, so.
Right. And I don't know if they've ever specifically shown us how that happens. I mean,
Yeah, maybe like the issue is it's like, he's like, not so they're not supposed to like go into each other without like it being, any consent, and he just kind of like went in while she was out of it.
It's hard to say because as they establish when these people are frozen, it's kind of like, as they put it, it's kind of like they're trapped in their own little mental prison of whatever that is, as we saw with Ptolemy and Melanie, whatever. Which means she's also got that going on, so she can't she's not going to be cognizant of anything in the outside world right now because she's just whatever's going on in there. The question is, if he, and I guess we'll, again, I'm assuming we'll find out in the next episode, if he, and pardon the phrasing here, but I didn't write any of this down. If he enters her, does he enter her mind as well, since they do share that consciousness, or
Yeah,
not? I
presumably.
think he would. I think it makes, because that's how they communicate with each other.
Yeah.
So I'm very
I don't
curious
know if
about
they,
that.
yeah, if they, we'll see them, hanging out and, watching TV as kids or whatever kind of something, but presumably something will be happening there.
Right. So, another thing that was going on throughout the episode was David was receiving visions of future Sid, and I think I caught on by the first or second R that she's spelling out with her little light wand, hurry. seemed like a lot for a little. It's like, oh yeah, she wants him to hurry up. No shit, whatever. But so I got a little. I was trying, and maybe it's because I watched this late at night. So and there might have been a little bit of liquor involved. I'm not saying. I did start to get a little bit fuzzy during some of the sequences that involved that little mad monk there. Now, I get that the monk was had kind of had the kids under his control. He's kind of they referred to him. It was like a Pied Piper thing happening with the kids, which was interesting. And he, I know that they get David for him, and that's when, and when he's with David, he ends up telling him the rest of that story that we saw in that flashback, which where we find out where that the like the booming sounds from Farouk in the egg, Farouk's body. I'm still kind of confused about that. Pretty much drives the monks mad. Either they end, some of them kill themselves, some of them are just, you know, gibbering idiots, whatever. The thing, the scene that got me a little, I was trying to, if there's one thing I need to go back and watch, and maybe I should have watched before we started recording, but you know, I was busy, was the scene with Fukuyama and the androids and the monk hanging from the ceiling, tethered to Fukuyama. And I was really trying to get what was happening and who we heard speaking and whether that was act. Whether at which times it was actually Fukuyama speaking, or was it the monk speaking through Fukuyama? I was getting a little hazy there. How did you take that whole part there? Maybe you might have a clearer view of it than I do, which would be nice.
Yeah, I got the impression that the monk was kind of just like, you know, downloading whatever Fukuyama had going on, and then the you know, the three android things were just kind of like failing and just kind of like, you know, saying stuff kind of on their own, not necessarily representing anybody at the moment. Just kind of like.
Okay. So during that scene, they're talking about the weapon, like
Yeah.
the weapon to defeat the Shadow King. Now, my assumption is the reason why the monk came to Division 3 was in search of this weapon that he somehow knows of. And now, whether we know for a fact, and they're saying straight out that David is the weapon or not. I mean, it seems to me like that's what they mean, that David is the weapon. I mean, Melanie certainly
Yeah.
thinks that. Although, it's like they want the weapon to defeat the Shadow King, but when they keep saying David is the weapon, both the monk and Fukuyama, neither one of them trust David.
Right.
And in fact, I think the monk is actually aware of what David's up to, and he's pretty much going to spill the beans about, hey, let's use a word that's in the news all the time, about David's collusion with Farouk. When I guess David it somehow is able to intervene, and next thing you know, it's like Nightcrawler time, and he transports both of them up to the roof. Then you get that little odd moment where, you know, I always tell people when it's either they're telling a joke or speaking to a group of people, like, know your audience. And David's one of those people who never seems to care about knowing your audience, because if there was ever a character who's not going to get what you're talking about as far as like girlfriends and stuff, it's going to be a, well, first of all, it's going to be a monk to begin with. And especially this guy. I just love the bewildered look. Is like, wait, what are you talking? Why are we talking?
It
What is this?
was that was really funny, it, you know, the timing there.
Very, it was very surreal. So, but at this point, the monk is really adamant that David does not help, cannot help Farouk, because it'll mean the end of the world. Which is sort of kind of the exact opposite of what future Sid's been telling David. And then, yeah, then the monk kills himself. But, which is, yeah, fine. At least someone's able to kill themselves here. But back to that help Farouk, don't help Farouk thing. You know, so now we're left in this situation, like, which one is actually going to be the thing that that will cause, you know, the end of days, you know? So again, we're talking about directly opposing or opposite actions, and which one is going to have the deadly consequence. And in a weird way, if you kind of really extrapolate that, it's like kind of like not knowing what red and what green is as you set out on the road. See, look how I kind of tied that. See, it all comes together. So brilliant. Was there anything? Oh, one last thing before we, because I realized we didn't mention it, and it bears mentioning, especially to our listeners who are fond of felines. Sid spends a lot more time trotting around the halls of Division Three as a cat in this episode, which it's so silly. I'm really enjoying it. And I wonder, as this random cat is roaming the hallways of Division Three, does anyone realize that it's Sid in the cat? Or do they just think, oh yeah, it's perfectly normal that a cat's going to be running around? You know, of course, then again, is it perfectly normal that you have like 10 and 12 year olds dressed up as guards running around? You know, so I guess, you know, anything goes at Division Three.
Well, yeah, Division Three headquarters, you know, since it's a circular structure that's constantly, like, you know, infiltrated by bad guys, like Star Labs, so may as well just have cats walking wandering around too. No reason not to.
Star Labs. That's true.
I think that's why we've had two straight weeks of various bad guys just going on a rampage.
Yeah. Or something happening. You know, in this case it was more, I don't know if the monk went on a rampage so much, but he still had a disastrous effect on them. And for our listeners who don't watch the superhero shows, we were just referencing The Flash, and a lot of action on that show takes place at a place called Star Labs, which, as Dan said, is circular in its architecture. And there's been a running gag for, was it, 3-4 seasons now? That apparently villains can just walk right in. That there's like literally no security. They've even broken the fourth wall a little bit, or sort of, by kind of commenting on that within the show a few times, because it's been one of those things like, do they even have a lock on the door? So Division Three, you'd think, would have tighter security, because it's, you know, this ultra top secret government or, I don't know, you know, black ops operation. That's kind of all I really got about the episode. This is one that really, this one flew by. This was a very, for me, I mean, granted, Noah Hawley, as we know, whether it be Fargo or Legion, he's allowed to go as long as he wants, apparently. And, you know, there have been Legion episodes that definitely went, you know, an hour and 10, hour and 15 minutes and so on. And I think even this one went over, but it didn't feel like it. It felt, and I'm not, I mean, usually we say that as a good thing. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing about this episode, but it went by really fast. And I don't know if there was a lot of, what's the phrase? I don't know if there was a whole lot of meat on that bone. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, the episode is basically David had to release everybody from being frozen by the monk, and I don't know if there was much more progression than that. If there's something I'm forgetting, so I liked it still. I don't know if it was quite the trip or if I enjoyed it as much as the other two. And I've noticed, you know, I kind of skimmed over various articles or reviews of the episode. And it's funny because I kid you not, I read one at the I zipped to the very end where this person in Britain was going, how this is by far the best episode of the season. And then someone else said the exact opposite. You know, it's like, oh, this is a step back for the series, and this is, you know, that they need to get back to what the show was. I was like, I think it falls somewhere in between. I think it's a good episode. I just didn't, you know, it just didn't bowl me over, but I don't expect every Legion episode to bowl me over. But I still enjoyed it for what it was.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I thought it was a good episode. I mean, it definitely went by fast. It didn't quite have as much crazy style as, you know, the first one, and, you know, I suppose the second one. But there was plenty of sequences that I think were really, really cool and really memorable.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there were definitely things that stood out about it. I really like getting more about the Loudermilk. So, I'm pointing to them first because the one thing about Legion is I think it's first and foremost, it's the style of the show and the look of the show. And then it's the story and the plotting of the show, and characters kind of tend to come in third on that list. And normally I get that will upset me about a show, but they do the stuff so well on this show, it doesn't bother me that much. Because I feel, number one, the performances are good enough, so that kind of helps me rise above that. And when we do get some character stuff, I do enjoy it. David's a very difficult character. And we're now, yes, chapter 11, so I can say it's 11, we've had 11 episodes with David. And I'll tell you right now, I still haven't made up my mind about him. As far as whether how much I genuinely like or dislike him as a character. I mean, I guess I like him. It's maybe because he's so unsure of the world and of himself. In a way, I'm kind of unsure of him as well, because maybe I'm like Fukuyama in them. Maybe I don't trust him. I'm just always expecting, I don't know, there's something off about him. And it's felt that way for a while now. And this season, the hinting that he may be turning bad or something at some point makes me trust him that much less, if that makes any sense. I think I did put my faith more on Sid. Present-day Sid. Not so much future Sid. By the way, let's mention this about the episode. I forgot this. I loved, one of the things I did love about this episode, I love Sid kept asking questions about her, the future version of herself. And she was asking questions that made a lot of sense that I would ask too. Because one of the first things she does, like, she wants to know what she looked like. Did she look better then or now? I would totally have asked that. If I was like 20-something and someone met like, you know, a 35 or 40-year-old version of me, I would ask that. And it's like, it looks like you put on a few. Oh, shut up. But I will point out again. I love that he was hedging on it. I love that he points out that there's no way to answer that, or he's not going to get in trouble. He says all those things. And what's the one thing he never says? He doesn't mention, well, there's this thing about one arm. So that was different. I was like, it's never going to get mentioned. But I did really enjoy that as well. So yeah, it's a good episode. I think I almost, you know how I got let down? Here's what happened. Let's just blame everything in the world today on Facebook now. Someone earlier that day had posted on Facebook that they heard that this is going to be a mind-blowing, game-changing episode of Legion tonight. I'm really looking forward to it. And I went, oh, okay. And I joked on their thread. It's like, well, you know, show me an episode of Legion that isn't mind-blowing, but I'm interested in knowing that it's going to be game-changing. I'm looking forward to it now. I was like, this didn't change no game. It's the same game, But and then maybe I got let down by that, so I can blame strangers for that.
Okay, and I've got this something too, like quite the mystery that I came up with here from this episode. So you can help me figure it out. This episode, I mean, I'll just tell you the various evidence that I've came up with, but I don't think it quite adds up. But you know, we got this cow. We got a Minotaur, which is, you know, a bull that you previously referenced. Mm-hmm. We have got characters, you know, with the last names Loudermilk. But do you think that's enough where somehow it makes sense for FarmersOnly.com to advertise during like the most cerebral comic book show ever? Because there, whoever just made that ad buy, I mean, there's just no world where that makes any fucking sense whatsoever. I mean, I know you don't have a lot of farmers around you in the big city, but trust me, these are not people they're going to find the least bit interesting in this extremely complicated, but like half of our friends don't want to watch it because it's so freaking, you know, abstract comic show. It just doesn't work. And it was there.
I don't know. Part of me wants to agree with you, and part of me wants to take the totally opposite point of view and say, what are you kidding me? It's the perfect thing for them to advertise. In fact, that cow, that's product placement, motherfucker.
Yeah, I wonder. You know, there was a lot of stuff going on this week with that.
In fact, they should have gotten responses like, you know, laughing cow cheese and started thinking about this. You know, wasn't it Borden's that used to have like a cow? Is there? I can't remember. I was all excited that you were. I was like, oh wait. Not only is Dan going to speak, it's going to be a crazy, great crackpot theory, because you usually come up with ones that actually turn out to be mostly right. So, farmers.com. Yeah. I should have known Hogan. Hey, look at us. We keep bringing things back from the beginning, like real podcasters. Yep. All right. So again, I don't mind that we don't have that much more to say about it because there wasn't that much else to talk
No.
about here. I mean, and how much are on and let's be honest, on a podcast, how interesting is it going to be to hear just to talk about what we thought of the visuals after a certain point? I mean, it's like, oh, look at that. It's like, hey, those words on the screen, they were making me think of this stuff from Travelers. Oh, by the way, we still need to get our season two of Travelers
Yeah.
podcast. It's lingering.
I'll tell you, Legion. I mean, there's some episodes where not a lot of stuff happens and things don't move forward a ton, but in a way that's kind of okay because, like I'll be watching a show like the previously mentioned Flash, where like there's a story arc where like, Barry develops some like, stupid paranoid character trait and that just plays out over the course of the episode in the most like obvious, like horribly telegraphed way like imaginable, and you know exactly what's gonna happen, and we've seen it happen so many times. And like that's just not how this kind of show is. Like, we'll see something interesting and it'll just kind of like, bounce back and forth for the whole course of the season. But I think we're able to give them enough credit where like, yeah, if things are kind of cranking forward slowly, at least it's not just like, the Captain Obvious of storytelling.
Right.
And yeah.
Oh, I will agree with you, especially because clearly this show is a number of notches beyond a show like The Flash. Although if we were talking specifically about this week's episode of Flash, I would say, hey, you know what? That was pretty good. Shut up. Let's save it for the other podcast. But that's what I want to talk about. Anyway, so all right, let's wrap this up because we got it done in a nice brisk fashion. And don't want to waste it by me rambling here. So, if you could find it in your heart to have enjoyed that podcast, you'll enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. Like the page, join the conversation about shows like Legion and so many others. You can find us on iTunes as well. Don't believe the hoaxy-like articles that went out this week that Apple is getting rid of iTunes. That's bullshit. That's not what's happening. Once again, people read a headline and misunderstand it and misconstrue it. That's not what's happening. iTunes is still going to be around. Podcasts will still be found on iTunes, at least for the near or distant future. So you can find us there. Type in Serious TV Drama Podcast, subscribe to the feed, and you can rate and review us there. Hell, if you type Serious TV Drama Podcast into Google, you can probably find a number of ways to find us and download and listen to us in a number of other places, even on YouTube. Because why wouldn't you want to watch a blank screen and listen to us talk? And finally, you can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. That's STVD, blah, 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 STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. And that's it for our Legion podcast tonight. We, of course, will be back next week with the next episode of Legion. And since we are talking about a show which, is essentially inspired and comes from a comic book, for the actual comic book geeky out there, just letting you guys know, we are finally going to get the gang back together for a giant comic book TV podcast. Probably within the next week. Technically, it was supposed to happen tonight, but because we delayed our Legion podcast, this had to take priority. So, but yeah, we'll be covering all the DC TV shows on that one, except for Gotham. That one we will not be talking about. Even though I've heard it's actually good this year, I don't care. I will still never watch it. That's about it. Anything else you want to say before I pull the curtain here?
No, I think we're good.
Okay. I'm glad that you were awake and so chatty tonight, Dan. No, I'm just kidding. Fucking with you. All right. So, with that, good night, Dan. Good night, all the cows out there. And good night to y'all.
Good night.